I'm Akron, Ohio. This is episode 196 of On the Tropes. We're just plowing through. You guys are not derailing in this time. On this week's episode, we are talking about the trope, nothing is scarier.
Plowing through. Anyway, go.
And our top five examples of things that are not, that nothing is scarier.
Dan.
I'm your host, Nick. Today I'm joined by...
Sir.
Eva.
And Kyle.
So before we get started on nothing is scarier, what is the last time... What was the last thing that scared you? When were you last scared, sir?
Man. This kind of like... I don't know. I can't really think of something right now that really scared me. Because I'm thinking about the last question you asked of what made me sick last episode. And the last time I was really scared, I thought I was going to throw up. And I didn't.
I'm glad you did.
Was it in public?
Yeah, it was bad.
Okay,
it was like one of those, like, I was like, I come from a restaurant that I will not name because it is local. Let's just say I learned not to eat out of the salad bar anymore. Oh, however, like, and I'm like trying to get to work. I'm like, I gotta get there to get to the bathroom and like throw up. And like, you know, you're trying to get out of your car and go past people.
Like, there's a marching band and some nuns.
Trying to like just keep the vomit down. And I'm so terrified I'm gonna like throw up right, like, you know, outside of this coffee shop. And just, it was bad. And then, you know, when I finally made it to the bathroom, I had like stifled it so much that I didn't have to anymore. Yeah, it's pretty scary.
Yeah.
Way to control your humors. Mm-hmm. Nicely done.
Mm-hmm. Eva, when was the last time you were scared?
So, I think I said a week or so ago that I just moved. And so it's an old house. I think it's been vacant for a while. So there's some critters in there who are used to having the house themselves. And I was putting up curtains. My friend who was helping me all of a sudden says, "Don't move." Like, and she's not like reactionary like this usually. She's like, "Don't move." It's like, okay. She's like, "There's a giant spider like right above your hand." She's like, "I'm gonna grab it." She goes and gets like a coffee can, and it's not like an ordinary like daddy long legs in the corner. This is a big
meaty spider.
It's like, got like a body.
You'd feel it.
It's the kind that should be either in the basement or never seen at all. Like, this is not a house spider. And so she grabs it. She takes it outside, and then like a week like later, like that week, a couple days later, I was like getting ready to get in bed and like, you know, like shake my sheet and my blankets out to like get them all back where they're supposed to be. And another one of those same creepy jerks comes crawling over the side of my bed and across the sheet.
Nick loves spiders.
I'm not a fan of spiders.
No. I mean, spiders outside, like now one of them is like right over my door where there's like a motion sensitive light. Like, that's great. You can eat anything that's trying to fly into my house.
Yeah, I understand that they have utility, but I don't want them.
No, not in my bed.
I don't want them laying eggs in my mouth while I sleep. Which you know they want to do.
That's all they think about.
That's all she's thinking about is where can I deposit these eggs?
Ah, there's Nick's mouth.
I saw a really funny thing on, I think it was on Twitter. It was, did you know that the average person eats 7 spiders when I cook for them? Kyle, what's the last time you were scared?
It was like 5 hours ago. I was going to Leah's house to check on her bunnies because she's out of town. And I took Charlie with me because she loves bunnies, and we did everything. We hung out at the house for a little bit, then we left, and they have this electronic lock on their door, so I did we went out the front door and I shut it, and then I was like futzing with the electronic lock for 5 seconds, turned around, Charlie was nowhere to be found. And fresh in my mind is stuff like, I don't know, like any kidnapping thing where it just takes 2 seconds.
Yeah, the witch.
I called her and I was just like,
Pet Cemetery.
What? She had run down, and of course this is the first time in her entire life she was ever quiet about anything. She was like a ninja. She went down the path to their front door and just was by our car, and I was just like, don't ever do that again.
Oh yeah, when the first time that happens, it's not. I mean, you never forget it.
Yeah,
you never forget how scared you were.
But it was just like, because she's always right on you and always making a lot of noise. But, yeah, of course she picks the one time to just be silent. It's terrifying. What about you, Nick?
Mine is actually from a movie. It's from... I didn't like it that much. I kept going back and forth as to how much I've liked it or disliked it. But it was,
did a guy rip his head off?
No, nobody rips their head off of this. It's a movie called Under the Silver Lake. It's by the guy who made It Follows.
Ugh.
But it's not a horror movie. It's like a detective movie, but there's a subplot where this guy is convinced that there's... I think it's called The Owl Woman or something like that, where it's mostly a person who will come into your house at night and they're naked, but they have like an owl head and then they kill you. And you actually see it on security footage at one point, and it makes like this weird like bird chittering noise. And something about the noise just creeped me out so much that like after I finished the movie, I was thirsty and I wanted to go downstairs and get a drink, but I'm like,
nope.
But oh fuck, that's where they are.
Yeah.
So I went down there and I just like made sure to like keep an eye over my shoulder just in case this fictional thing from like 10 seconds of this movie actually came to get me.
Lisa went to check on the bunnies last night, and she, one of the things we had to do was change out the water, and she had to go into their bathroom, and she had to check behind the curtain just to like make sure,
just in case.
That's one of those things where like, do killers just notoriously hang out behind curtains? Is that something that they're you're trained to do when you go to killer school?
Well, if you wanted to kill something, there were curtains there.
Yeah.
Seems like a no-brainer. So this week we're talking about the trope Nothing is Scarier. And it's kind of an amalgamation of a few things, because they give a few examples of it. And they divide it into like three subcategories. So I actually have examples for each of those.
You don't have five examples for each one.
No. I have examples for each of those, so we can like kind of divide it and discuss like how each of them work. But Nothing is Scarier, the like umbrella trope is basically that the gist of it is that it's the anticipation of the fright is scarier than the fright itself.
Yeah.
So the first iteration of this, they refer to it as wait for it, which is where something is there, but it doesn't come in the way that you expect it to. So in movies, a lot of times it's you're looking around and you have a flashlight and you... They go, oh, I think we're looking for the killer, and I don't see the killer. And they go, oh, well, the killer's not here. And then they turn, and then it's there. So my example for that is, we talked about it in last week's episode, or maybe 2 weeks. Yeah, 2 weeks ago, for foreshadowing. But it's like the raptors. So it can be done cleverly, where the raptor gets you from the side. But a lot of times, it's just that lazy, like, oh, we think it's not here. Turn, pan the camera to the left, jump scare.
Yeah.
So that's wait for it. One of them is called There All Along. And my example of this is, it's not scary, but just so you get the idea of it. There's a scene in the room where Lisa's talking and her neck is twitching. And you don't notice it at first. But then when you do notice it, you realize that it had been there the whole time.
There's a scene in... Hereditary.
Yeah, that's I think that's on my list.
Really?
Is that,
because I don't think that turns into anything, but I don't think I noticed it at first.
It's not on my list. How is that not on my list? Because it was the first thing I thought of.
But it was like the weirdest thing. Because it's what's in the background. It's not normal.
So this is my favorite version of the trope, is because if something is there all along, a lot of times it's something that's like camouflaged in the scene, and it's like not everyone's noticing it at the same time. So one of the examples was like when you first see the fawn in Pan's Labyrinth, it's camouflaged, and then eventually you realize that the fawn has been there the entire time. And I love that one in Hereditary, because it's just such good framing.
Yeah.
That as soon as you see it, you're like, oh fuck.
Yeah.
But it's been there for much longer than you realize. That's the last moment in Hereditary that I actually like, and then after that, the movie kind of goes off the rails for me.
Well, that shot was where it turns the corner, but they did that one so well.
Yeah, but that shot's incredible. Yeah, I think it's incredible. It's cool. Yeah, because like you have to be. You have to know what you're doing to pull off something like that. Otherwise, because if you see it right away, if that scare, you see it immediately, it doesn't work.
Yeah. ever since I went to, I've probably talked about this a lot, but ever since I went to film school, movies don't scare me quite as much because I know like what goes behind a lot of stuff. But something that I will never understand, I don't think, because I think a lot of it has to do with audio in particular, is just tension building in any shot. Like nothing is actually happening at all, but you're afraid and you don't know why.
Yeah.
Well, and we abhor a vacuum. You know, if there's no sound, if there's nothing seems to be happening, I think we start getting on edge. A feeling of, why am I here? Yeah. Why is the director showing me this? Why am I here if there's nothing
going on? I think in a way it's kind of like when, I feel like we talked about it a few episodes ago, but like at night when it's raining, why is that scarier to us than like when it's not raining? And it probably is just because, we're kind of thrown off and can't hear perfectly anymore, and it makes us uncomfortable. But yeah, a lot of my examples are just the lead up to something that either doesn't scare you or it's more of the build up than anything, which I like.
And then the final iteration of nothing is scarier is called nothing at all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where you're scared but you really didn't.
Nothing happens.
Yeah, or maybe it was justified, but ends up happening. So my example for this, do you know where I'm going?
Zodiac.
Yes. Yeah. It's the basement scene in Zodiac, where it's terrifying, and like maybe he had a right, like maybe he should have been scared.
Yeah.
But nothing happens. But it's so terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think it's debatable as to how much of that is in his head and how much isn't. But
we're there with him.
It's one of the scariest things I've ever seen in a movie. But it ends up being like a straw man. Like it is nothing.
Yeah.
So I like that one too. I think Wait for It is probably the least interesting or the easiest one for it to be a cheap thrill. But yeah. Nothing at all is probably like the best example of this trope where there wasn't anything, but you were still scared. And it's tough to pull off.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about this trope?
I think it's more emotional than anything else.
You think?
I think it's like, it's almost like what you're saying, Eva. Like, it's more, like, I'm thinking about the most disturbing one on my list. And yeah, it's purely about just how bleak the moment is.
Mm-hmm.
And just this sense of, like, a really scary unknown. And yeah. So I think that's like where a lot of its power comes from.
Yeah. Well, and there's also the thing of, the thing that you're going to make up in your head is going to be scarier than what they're going to show you, because your brain's going to go to the thing that scares you the most.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so a lot of that, when there's these, you know, these moments on film where nothing seems to be happening or there's no sound or it's dark, you're going to fill something in and it's not going to be pleasant.
Yeah. That goes with like monster movies where when they show the monster, it's like almost not scary anymore.
Yeah. Right. Sometimes the monster isn't effective. Like, that's why Signs fails as
was
a movie for
was
me.
Good until a certain point.
Or Super 8. Yeah. I have a similar issue with Super 8.
I had an issue with Quiet Place. They handled the monster okay in that, but
they
showed it a little too much. I thought. Yeah.
I like the monster in A Quiet Place, but I can see why. Like they don't need to. They don't really ever need to show the monster.
Yeah, I mean Bird Box. Horrible movie, but they didn't show the monsters.
Yeah, it's effective.
Really,
it's effective in that sense. I thought about putting it on my list. I have it written down and like other things to mention. I like what I like the idea of what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work that well. Should we do our top fives?
Yeah,
Kyle, what's your number five?
My number five is Bird Box, but the book. I read it, so I saw that the movie was coming out. Love the concept of it. The trailers for it made it actually look decent. So I picked up the book and read it really quickly. Loved it. It's by Josh Malerman. He's not even really like a writer.
Isn't he in a band?
Yeah, he's in a band. The writing style of the book is kind of weird, but the concept of something being scary that you can't see comes across way better in a book, where it is a lot of your imagination and you are creating the scary thing yourself. And a lot of horrific things happen in the book, but since you're reading it and not actually seeing it, you can create those scary parts yourself. And
yeah, there's just a lot of interactions where the characters are supposed to keep their eyes closed and things are happening and they don't see it, or it just, it handles that tenseness well. And it was one of the first books that made me kind of paranoid to walk around my house at night for a few days afterwards. But yeah, the book is a lot, I liked it a lot better than the movie. Yeah, Bird Box. What would be your number five, Eva?
The Shining.
There's the Shining?
No.
Quiet. You only get sued?
There's a lot of moments in The Shining with the ghosts in the hotel that are very, like, mundane, almost. They're, like, the first time Danny sees the two girls, that they're just standing there, and then they just turn and walk away. And there's no, you know, he's not investigating a strange noise and he finds them. Or, and the scene that scared me the most in the book, I was reading it in study hall at school and got scared. I got scared in a high school that had more than 2,000 people in it at the time, and I was scared to leave the classroom and walk down the hallway.
Wait, how big was your high school? That's much bigger than, what school did you go to?
I went to Elyria. It was the second largest high school at the time.
Because Firestone only had 1,000 and change. It was like 300 per class.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
we had, and it's funny because like there was like a little less than 400 kids in my graduating class, and my dad thought that was just an embarrassment because there was like 850 in his.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so The Shining, the part with the man in the dog costume, it's a lot more involved in the book than it is in the film, but it was just so scary. And it's not set up at all. That's not a character we had ever heard anything about before then, and it's not explained after that. It's just, she just turns her head and there they are.
Either you guys have, or any of you guys have Sixth Sense in you?
No.
The kid, talking about ghosts, the kid who's asked if he wants to see your dad's gun.
Where his dad's gun is.
Yeah, and then he turns around, I'm like, ah! It's like not even really scary or anything, it's just...
There's something, those kinds like of scares, those kinds of scares where it's almost, it's very mundane.
Yeah.
It's just very plainly something terrifying in front of you, scare me very badly.
Yeah.
What I like about The Shining is, well, I love a lot of things about The Shining, but specifically about the Grady twins, is that they're terrifying. Like, that's what scares me about the movie the most. But they aren't actually bad or evil. Right. They have terrible things happen to them.
Yeah.
Well, they seem to be trying to lure Danny to his death.
Yeah, but...
By saying, come play with us.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely, like, they become sinister ghosts.
But are they? I mean, do they know any better?
In a...
Yeah, I mean,
maybe
they're not.
Maybe
I,
not.
Do,
maybe
I think
not
they're.
I don't know.
Is there anything in the text that says that they know better, or maybe they?
I
just
don't think that happens in the book, though. That whole thing with come and play with us, Danny. Yeah. I don't think that. I think Danny just sees what happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
But like, just like the woman in the bathtub rolling him the ball, like she's trying to hurt him.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, but the kids. I mean, you could read it as simply as they don't know, or they don't understand what happened to them. They're the ghosts or apparitions or whatever, and they see a kid and they want to play with them. If you want to take that route, there's nothing like explicitly threatening about them,
right? They don't try to hurt him,
and yet let me be clear,
that's scary.
They're terrifying.
Yeah, and because of that, every set of little twin kids that you'll ever see for the rest of your life are scary. Identical twins, I guess.
Yep.
What about the twin festival in Wadsworth?
In Twinsburg?
Twinsburg,
that's what I said.
What a place to have that.
Well, where else could you have it?
So Nellie's had to work that a lot because the dermatology department at UH like will go there and they have people
experiment on twins.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a more like medically
soft term. Yeah, no, experimentation.
Yeah, they do research because for genetic reasons you can
it's better, a good control.
You can better figure out like exposures and things like that. How much of that
by
is
killing
genetic
one
and how much
twin?
Is not. Yeah, so they have to murder a lot of twins, which is like it's not great.
I mean, you're calling the herd.
You get that information, anyways.
Well,
my point was
100 years ago they would have been murdered anyway.
So this thing, twins from like across the country come to this.
Yeah.
And
it's fucking weird.
apparently a lot of them hook up with each other.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it's probably like the Olympics. The Olympics for twins.
That's exactly what it is.
Twin Olympics.
So anyways, sir. What's your number five?
So 2005, Werner Herzog was like kind of a big influence on, like, I'd say this generation's indie film culture.
You steal my number one?
I think I might be.
All right.
Well, there's only one way to settle this.
Yeah, and it's almost a callback to last week's episode, Gruesome Death, Cruel and Unusual Death. Well, the thing, so Werner Herzog comes out with this documentary called Grizzly Man, and the lead up to this documentary coming out, I've never again seen, like, there's never been a documentary this anticipated, because we found out that this dude, Timothy Treadwell, was going to be killed by a bear on the film, which of course made most of us at the time like really, really want to see it. And man, it's not exactly a letdown. It's kind of horrifying.
It's horrifying. And
it's almost more horrifying
because it's not there.
Yeah. So essentially what ends up happening, we go to see this movie, we're like, kind of not disappointed, just weirded out, because it doesn't show it. However, Werner Herzog has a tape of the death.
Because the audio tape.
Yeah, the guy used to go into the woods and he would.
Oh yeah, I guess we still.
He thought he was like one. Remember this? He was one with the bears. Basically. Yeah.
And listeners, that is just as ridiculous as it sounds. Like he just had no training as an animal. I don't know, control person handler. Handler, whatever, like a bear handler. It's not like he was like a Russian wrestler or anything. He's not Khabib Nurmagomedov.
Yeah, bears can only be controlled,
right?
Briefly.
So like, he would go out there and he would like wrestle around with them. He would sit with them. He would try to feed them stuff.
He thought that they had accepted him, right?
Yeah, exactly.
He thought he was like, seen as a bear by them.
Yeah, which,
and this has been going on for years, months.
A while.
I think it was years.
Yeah.
Well, he thought
his girlfriend had like moved out there with them and stuff. And
But his death was on audio, or was it just like the moments before?
It's his entire attack. So Werner Herzog is sitting there.
I have the quote written down.
Yeah.
So I'll make this my number five, I suppose, because I mean it was going to be my number one. It's so good.
Oh, it's. I mean, you want to just read the quote later for your number one?
No, that's fine. Isn't he sitting down with the woman who hit the
he's
Timothy Treadwell's
there, yeah, with like
one girlfriend?
Their, yeah. Well, she was killed.
Friend? No, it's his. It's just like a good
girlfriend.
Girlfriend
was killed with him, which is awful because it was so obvious she was just out there because she really cared about him and he was going off the rails and good lord, don't follow your partner into.
Yeah, it's like Gladys Knight said in Midnight Train to Georgia.
I'm leaving.
I'd rather live in his world than live without him in mine.
Mm. Well, she didn't get to do either.
No.
Mm-hmm.
You can't live in the bear world.
Yeah.
Nope.
So he listens to the tape with headphones on while his old friend is sitting across the table from him. And he puts the headphones down and says, "You must never listen to this recording. You must destroy it and never listen to it."
Yeah. So then
and you're just like, what the fuck did he just hear?
What could make Werner Herzog say that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's terrifying. It's just
what is his connection to
nature? He hates it.
No. Herzog with Grizzly Man. Yeah.
He felt like it was
a story he wanted to tell.
Okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure if they like knew each other at all.
That was kind of his documentary. Like his career resurgence happened with that documentary.
Yeah, it wasn't the first documentary he made, but it was
easily the best.
It was his first like big hit in a while.
Next to him eating a boot,
huh?
Didn't he eat a boot?
God,
he ate a boot. Yeah,
great documentary. Yeah, that's an old one. I love that movie. It's my favorite movie of all time.
Which one? Grizzly Man.
The Werner Herzog eats his boot.
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, I think every artist should watch it.
We should do an episode dedicated to that man.
I'll do it right now.
Oh, I'll do a Werner Herzog episode.
We'd all have to talk like him for the
entire episode. Said that like directing is the two closest things to directing are cooking a meal and walking on foot. And God damn it, he's right. He's absolutely right.
he's an entertaining man. I haven't seen that many of his movies. I've maybe seen like six or seven.
I mean,
but it's definitely one that I need to like. I gotta dive into his like second tier movies, because I've seen most of his top tier, but
I have a really bad opinion of some of his films. A lot of them, are awful.
Like the filmmaking, or
no, just
the background. Well, yeah, yeah.
He was popular during an era where
he's done some questionable things. I'll put it delicately.
Really questionable and
overtly exploitative.
Overtly, yeah.
But is the every movie I've seen?
Kind of horrifying to watch some of those films.
Yeah,
like, you can't watch Copa Verde.
I've never watched Copa Verde.
Don't try; it's messed up.
But I think Aguirre and Fitzcarraldo and even his Nosferatu, like, masterpieces.
And Grizzly Man. Have you seen Even Dwarves Started Small?
No, I haven't.
You'd like it if you like David Lynch.
Yeah, the only documentaries of his I've seen are Grizzly Man and Little Dieter Needs to Fly, which is the guy from Rescue Dawn. It's like the actual guy that Rescue Dawn was, the Christian Bale character in Rescue Dawn is Dieter. And he just like, he makes up stuff in his documentaries. Like there's a thing where the guy, he like can't close doors the right way. And he says, or he has to like close them three times or something. And he says it's so that he knows that he won't be trapped again, because he was a POW in Vietnam. It's just something Werner Herzog made up. And he's like, just do this. It'll be a good thing for the movie.
Documentaries have done that since.
Yeah.
The beginning of film.
So, yeah,
Nanook of the North.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I love his particular way of doing that. That example is great. Kyle, what's your number four?
My number four is somewhere on my list. My number four,
second to the last.
Yeah, is a pair of kids' bedrooms in scary video games that come out in the last couple of years. Resident Evil 7 and Layers of Fear. Particularly Resident Evil 7, because that game has elements in it that can kill you. And you are walking through this bedroom and they do the classic things of like the ball rolls across the room. The rocking horse is like rocking without anyone touching it. There's just a lot of creepy things, and you expect to run across something really terrifying, them to introduce like a kid zombie that'll kill you, but nothing actually happens in that entire room. But it is by far the scariest part of the entire game, because you're just waiting and all this buildup of waiting for something terrifying to come kill you takes over, and nothing actually happens in that room, but it's really scary. And then in Layers of Fear, there's just a scary part in a bedroom, but it's not as effective. But yeah, Eva would be your number four.
My number four is The Road by Cormac McCarthy. And there's a lot of like the overall circumstances of what's happening in that film that are never really explained, like what exactly happened to cause this disaster. But specifically, the scene that I thought of is when they find the people in the cellar that are chained, and then closer inspection reveals that they are missing some of their limbs. These are people who are being kept alive and very slowly being disarticulated and eaten by someone nearby that we never see. And the people in the basement aren't any harm to them or any threat to them, but it kind of just gives you an idea of who else is around them, who's nearby them, and it's just scary.
Man, that's a great adaptation. I do think the book is, it's better yet. The movie
incredibly hard to
great
read.
Job. Yeah,
it's a fast read.
I would say like I wouldn't, if somebody said, well, I'll just watch the movie, I'd be like, yeah, okay. You'd still get it.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful movie too.
Sir, what's your number four?
So my number four is another dying scene via audio. So it's Lambert dying on Alien. There's a guy who's killed in the original Alien movie that Ripley just hears him dying, like on the intercom, and it's like really, it's just like really, it's really scary. Great moment. Nick, what is your number four?
What is my number four? I'm going to go with the movie Eighth Grade. And there's a scene towards the end where it's about a girl who's like towards the end of her eighth grade year. And she ends up hanging out with some kids in high school. And she gets a ride home with a girl and one of her friends who's a guy. And the girl gets dropped off first. And the guy at one point parks the car and gets into the back seat and tries to do things with her. and nothing actually happens. But the entire time, it's a horror movie. For a 5-minute scene, it's a straight up horror movie. And it ultimately doesn't come to anything that causes a direct, like, you know, physical
harm, right?
Yeah. She doesn't come of any harm. She's bothered by it, but it's not quite nothing, because she is, like, mentally bothered by it, but it seems like it's leading somewhere much worse than what ends up happening, and it's really, really, really hard to watch. It's a really good movie.
I didn't see it when it was at the Nightlight, but I do want to check it out.
It's on, I think it's on Prime. I watched it on Canopy, which
I think
you should have Canopy too, because you have the same library I have. Mm-hmm. So Canopy is awesome.
You have
a library that can get you it. Kyle, what's your number three?
My number three takes place in the first Walking Dead game, and that's when they make their way to the St. John family farm. I don't know if that's in the comic book at all. It's one of the first places in the game where you kind of feel safe, because it's this big, not compound, but the zombies aren't their biggest fear there. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of just exploring the area. It's one of the, since it's the first Walking Dead game, you do a lot more walking around and just kind of poking around places. But you find one of the people that you went there with, he was injured, and it turns out that he was like, the people at the, that were living there, cut him up, and when they serve you dinner, you're not really sure where the meat comes from, and it's like one of the creepiest things that you never actually see happen. You just wonder how long they've been doing this for, and then you just have to get out of there. So it was one of those moments where, like, they don't actually do anything scary or creepy, or they don't try to do that. But I think it was in the game. I don't think it was in the book, where there's that, the tremors or whatever, and it's like a sign of if you've eaten people or something. Maybe that's another zombie thing in general. But it's just one of those things where you just think about what this family has done in the past, and it creeps you out. It's really messed up. Eva, what's your number three?
It's The Sentinel.
Mm-hmm.
It's a late 70s supernatural horror kind of film. The woman moves into an apartment house and thinks that she's meeting her neighbors, and then finds out that there aren't any neighbors. The people that she's been meeting are ghosts.
Oh.
And there's a part where she, you know, goes out in the hallway to investigate a noise in the middle of the night. And this is another one of those things that's very ordinary. It doesn't jump out and grab her. It's not like something scary touches her. This figure just walks past her.
Yeah. Like, doesn't even acknowledge.
Exactly. And just like in a straight line. And it's just terrifying. And so, of course, she follows it, you know. And then there's a scene after that of her like fumbling around in this dark apartment trying to figure out who this person is that just walked past her in the middle of the night. And yeah, it's a good one. It's a good scare.
I still gotta see that movie.
It kind of reminds me of that shot in the way you described it, kind of reminds me of that shot in Get Out. Even though the gardener is, he exists, the way that when he runs past,
it's a lot like that.
It's super weird. I was just like, what is happening?
Because you realize that there's something happening here that I don't completely understand. Sir, what's your number three?
So my number three is Tim Burton's Batman, and it's Joker's like early scenes becoming the Joker are really, like, really scary, and they're just done so effectively. There's a scene where when the doctor's unbandaging his face and just like completely freaks out when he sees how he looks, and you don't actually see it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of moments like that leading up to like the reveal of how he looks, where people are just really shocked, and you kind of get the idea that like his face is much more horribly disfigured, and that the makeup is probably hiding it. Is kind of one thing that seems like it might be the case. So yeah, the original great Joker portrayal by Jack Nicholson. I might have to dip out like right at 5:25 to make it to church for this thing.
Or You want to do your other ones right now?
Maybe I should.
Okay.
So my number two is, it's from A Cabin in the Woods. And so great movie. And, you know, it features all these iconic horror horror monsters. And mm-hmm. there's one container that has something called Kevin in it.
Oh, yeah.
That they, like, mention over and over again. And the characters really kind of make clear that they're really afraid of this thing. And you never see what it is. You never find out whether it's a monster, a kid, psychic powers or something. Like, you never know. And it's apparently not really a reference to anything. Like, there's still kind of a mystery as to what exactly.
They're just being silly.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So. I like to think that isn't Kevin Elijah Wood's character's name in the first Sin City story?
It is.
The one with,
that's right.
That's what I always pictured as just Elijah Wood.
Yeah.
A Day to Kill For.
Yeah.
That'd be crazy if Joss Whedon, like, made a movie years down the line of just, like, Kevin.
And then, so my number one is The Matrix. And it's the first thing I thought of when you suggested this. And there's a scene where, it's the scene where Trinity rescues Neo, like, off the street. And she's, like, get in the car. Mm-hmm. And they're driving around. And there's this great moment where she's talking to Neo about being in the Matrix. And he's kind of, like, talking about being unsure of it. And he's kind of like, I'm going to get out of here. And he opens the door. And she says, go ahead, Neo. Except if you leave, you know where that road goes. And they both look, and it just, all it is this, like, desolate street, like, in the middle of the city. It is one of the most ominous scenes, like, in film history. Something about it, and, like, I don't know if it's the, like, maybe it's the music. I had turned down, I'll let you guys kind of. However, it kind of, is that emotional sense of, like, bleakness and just, like, and having no other real option. And, yeah, just perfect lighting and the scariest alley ever.
Please, Neo, you have to trust me.
Why?
Because you have been down there, Neo. You know that road.
I mean, it's just like something about it is just like horrible, you know? And I remember seeing that as a kid and just thinking like a lot about like depression and just like, just that sense of if you don't do something with your life or fulfill yourself and kind of let your despair overtake you. Like that's what that like road is for Neo. So, yeah. And yeah, there's nothing scarier to me than that. So Nick, what were you on?
I'm on number three.
Number three. I actually have to.
You have to take.
I got to bounce. All
right.
So
hi,
peace.
Congrats again.
I've been Sir.
And Kyle. So my number three is a documentary from last year called Free Solo, and it is about a dude who climbs El Capitan in one of the national parks. I don't know. I'm not a geography guy, but it's basically a wall straight up that's quite high. And he decides to climb it without a harness or anything like that.
So
you know that watching this movie that since it's going to the masses and like the guy was on stage at the Oscars, you know, he didn't die, but while you're watching it, you're still terrified. Even though
you have Grizzly Man in the back of your mind the entire time.
You think all documentaries are snuff films.
Yeah. Like, you know, you're scared even knowing that it's all going to end up okay. Just because what he's doing is so insane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a really, really good movie.
Did they ever do any, like, does he ever slip? And, like,
nobody.
Dramatic cuts.
There's one part, like, he goes through, because he's climbed it a number of times with stuff. So he has, like, it's not him. Like, climbers have names for all the different parts, and there's one part where it's like at a corner of two rocks, and he basically has to like jump from one to the other and just like catch himself with his fingertips. And
who's filming it?
Jimmy Chin and then his team. Jimmy Chin is like
are they in harnesses?
They're in harnesses. Yeah.
Jeez.
Even what they're doing is like probably dangerous.
Yeah,
but it's not nearly as dangerous. And like during the movie, one guy, like, they're all friends with them. They're all like climbers, and yeah, they've done stuff together.
Did he peace out?
The guy who's filming from the ground, like, turns around. He's like, he just has the camera there. He's like, I can't look at this.
Yeah,
like, I'm not gonna watch my friend die because he's a psychopath.
That's crazy. Is he a psychopath?
Sort of. Yeah, sort of. Kyle, what's your number two?
My number two is a late add-on, and it's the carpet scene in the room. I don't know. It was just something that...
Room, not the
room. Oh, room. Yeah, room. In room. Like... Sorry. Sorry. It's weird how, like... Yeah.
Very different movies.
Yeah, the completely different movies. Yeah, the rug scene in room.
Yeah.
Me and Lisa were both convinced... This would be one of those. I forget the subtrope was. Nothing happens or
nothing at all.
Nothing at all.
Yeah. It ends up going the way.
But there are so many different outcomes because the beginning of the movie is so just dark and intense and raw and you're like, these people can't catch a break.
So anything's on the table.
You assume that anything can happen and will happen, but for the most part, it's pretty normal. It's just what you're feeling for the first time watching it. You're just losing your mind. Lisa was like crying during that scene.
Yeah, my heart was like about to beat out of my chest. That's one of the most stressed out I've ever been, like most heart pounding, where I could like feel my heart beating. That and like the first time I watched The Godfather when he's like looking for the gun in the bathroom.
Oh yeah,
that one did it for me.
Eva, would be your number two?
My number two is Exorcist 3. Have either of you seen Exorcist 3?
Is that the
Legion?
The 10th? What was the 9th?
Oh, yeah. 9th configuration.
Yeah. Is this the 10th configuration?
No. So the Exorcist 3 came out about 1990, I think. And it has what is considered the greatest jump scare in any film. And it's set up so well, and you feel like, oh, you know, this jump scares are cheap, you know, this is just, it's amazing because it starts with this like long shot down this hallway in a hospital, and there's a nurse at this station, and like, why are we watching her? We have no idea who she is. We haven't seen her in the film before. She, you know, hears a noise. She goes into somebody's room, and then it turns out, oh, the noise she was hearing was just the ice melting in somebody's drink.
Weird.
You know, just chunk, you know, kind of sound. And they're like, oh, that's all it was. Somebody jumps and scares her. So you think it's over. But for some reason, we're back to the shot of her working at her station again. We're like, why is this keep happening? And it's still building and building and building. Every kill in the movie, and there's been some really gruesome murders in this movie, they've all happened off camera. And so you're kind of expecting, oh, she's going to walk into this room and we're never going to see her again. And then we're going to find out later.
They show everything.
Oh, they do. And it's another where she looks in a room because she hears the sound. She looks in the room. Apparently it's fine because we don't go in the room with her this time. It's still the long shot of the hallway. Mm-hmm. She goes in. She comes out and somebody comes out after her. Blech. And she doesn't react. It's not like she saw him and went eek and ran from him.
Yeah.
She looked in there, thought it was fine, comes back, and it's right on her. It's great.
I feel like The Exorcist is a movie where they've come out with several sequels. How are they connected at all in the universe? Or
is it
literally just they're all possession movies?
The possession is kind of weird in Exorcist 3. So William Peter Blatty, who wrote The Exorcist, they wanted him to do a sequel, and he had wanted to do Legion, which is his book that Exorcist 3 is based on. He wanted to do that for Exorcist 2. That didn't work out. It has a thematic connection, and in Exorcist 3, one of the characters from the first movie shows up again. But it's really more about, you know, like, a character who's in like a spiritual crisis.
Yeah.
They did shoehorn an exorcism scene into the end of this film because they were like, well, it's called The Exorcist. We're calling it Exorcist 3. There has to be one, but.
Yeah. I think that's, I mean, it, it sounds like that movie is actually pretty good, but there's a lot of things with horror movies where like they go sequel, like 5, 6, 7.
Yeah.
And they just keep going for too long. And
yeah. Exorcist 2 is considered pretty bad. Because
The Exorcist is a classic movie, and maybe like, I don't know anyone who's asking for like sequels and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, it was the time, you know, people, that's what you did when one movie made a lot of money. You made another one.
You say that was the time. Like, it's not
right.
It's still the time.
Yeah. We don't do it.
I mean, I think there was an Exorcist movie that came out in the last few years.
There was one, a prequel one. Yeah,
they've done like the Exorcism of Emily Rose.
That's which a different thing.
Oh, that's different.
Yeah, but the...
Well, there's another prequel.
Dominion, I think it was called. And it had... it was about how Father Marin, the first time Father Marin came in contact with this demon. That one was... I mean, it's okay.
Yeah, Dominion. Yeah. Oh, the other one was called Exorcist the Beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Nick, what's your number two?
My number two is it's just the entirety of The Leftovers. So, basically, the plot of the show is that all at once, 2% of the population just disappears. And they never explain why. It's never explained. Like, the show isn't even concerned with, like, how or why, like, where they went. How it happened, would it happen again? I guess there are times when they think something might have happened again that ends up not having been true. But there's just this sense of like dread and low level fear throughout based on this disappearance that happened all at once. And I think it's a fantastic show. It's like the reason why I'm excited for The Watchmen to come back is because it's the same creator.
Is it like sci-fi or just...
It's a lot like Twin Peaks, actually, because it has a lot of dream logic later on in the show. But one thing that I came across on Twitter the other day, Alan Sepinwall, who is a TV and film critic, he's for Rolling Stone, and he wrote that big book on The Sopranos called The Soprano Sessions.
Oh, yeah.
That I got from my dad, and the Breaking Bad 101 companion book. He did a poll on Twitter the other day where in the very last episode, one of the characters tells a story that may explain things about the show. And his poll was just, is she telling the truth or is she lying? And 8,000 people replied and it was exactly 50-50. So I think that's great evidence for, how the show wrapped up. I think it's like one of the best endings of any show that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And the show, the first season's not as good as the second two, but the second and third season are up there for two of the best seasons of any TV show I've ever seen.
Nice.
And it's all just about this. It's not even a mystery. It's just dealing with the dread of this horrible thing that happened to everybody.
Is it probably easier to watch than Twin Peaks?
Yeah. I mean, Twin Peaks is the most off the wall show ever, which is why I love it so much. Kyle, what's your number one?
The entirety of PT. I don't know how they do it. Do you know anything about PT?
No.
It's a weird story now because it was pitched as this like demo for a game that was going to come out. But it came out really mysteriously, and you only found out what it was a demo for if you beat it. But it's like this really mysterious thing where you're walking through this hallway, and you go straight, and then you make a right turn, and then in front of you is like the foyer for the front door, and then another door, and you go through that other door, and then the hallway repeats itself. Mm-hmm. And each time you go through this hallway, you need to do something like different in order to trigger like the next version of the hallway. Otherwise you just keep repeating over and over again. But it's this hyper realistic looking thing. And I think in the first hallway you hear this radio story and it's about this like gruesome murder that happened, and you just kind of assume that it happened at the house that you're in. And as you keep going further and further in, more there's like writing on the wall and creepier things. There's like a baby fetus in the sink in the bathroom, and like it becomes like weirder and weirder. And then eventually there's a part where there something like will actually kill you if you do the right thing, and it's just one of those things where the atmosphere is so spot on and you're just completely unsure of what's going to happen or what's possible, and it's crazy. But the weird thing about the game is it was a teaser for a game that got canceled, and because of that the
setup doesn't go anywhere.
Well, the demo they like removed it from the store. So the only way to play it right now is to if you had it on your PlayStation and didn't delete it, because you can't like re-download it. So I have it on mine, but there's a lot of people that just like will never be able to experience this, and it's really creepy, and I think it's by far like the scariest game thing I've ever played. It's weird. It's off-putting. And it's one of those things where like nothing really happens. It's just
there's something about things written on walls that is always scary.
Yeah, and it's super weird. But I thought it was incredible. But yeah, that's my number one. What about you, Eva?
My number one is it was a word for jump scare before we called them jump scares. They used to be called the Luton bus.
Like is that a German word?
No, like Val Luton. So Val Luton is kind of credited with the phenomenon of a character like building tension, and then there's a sound and the character realizes, oh, that's not the thing that I was scared was going to happen. It's from Cat People was the first one.
That was also my number one.
Okay, so I'll... Nice. But yeah, so that's where this whole phenomenon was
called.
My number one
got sniped twice, because this one got bumped to number one.
Yeah, so that was called...
So I would have sniped you if Sir hadn't sniped me. This is some BS.
Right? This is all out of order. So anyway, we can share.
Yes.
And because he does it in The Leopard Man also.
Yeah. Cat People has two great nothing is scarier moments for me. Which one were you
going
to go with?
I was going for the bus, the sound of the air brake on the bus when he's walking. And, you know, we hear this loud hiss and it's fine. It's just the bus next to him. Mm-hmm. Everything's fine. Don't be scared.
Yeah,
being scared.
Yeah, that scene is actually the first one that I thought of, but I think the pool scene is actually my favorite scene in the movie.
Oh, definitely.
Just because the way it's shot, and not just like in terms of how scary it is, but something about the water reflecting on the walls looks really beautiful,
mm-hmm.
but it's also disorienting because you're seeing basically it's a... I forget the character's name, but she's in a pool and she thinks someone has followed her into the pool. Are into like the area that the pool is in, and she's in the middle of it and calling out, and you just see like her looking around, and then you see the perimeter of the pool basically, and the water's like shimmering on the walls, and nothing really comes of it, but it's still terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the visuals of that scene. I love how it builds tension, and I love that the tension ultimately amounts to nothing in that moment, but it's important narratively. Like it
mm-hmm.
it comes into play. Like it's just building this like feeling of dread and claustrophobia that this character has.
Yeah, I don't know like what it is with just shots that make you feel uncomfortable,
mm-hmm.
and that's why PT was so weird to me, is because like it happened immediately. They didn't need to build up a character arc or anything, or a situation or a building or an environment. They just threw you in this place and you just immediately felt uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's sort of like Hereditary, how immediately you just feel like something is bad, like something is off.
Yeah,
and that's how PT is a lot.
That's awesome.
But yeah, Cat People's an awesome movie.
Did you have to watch any of Luton's? I've always heard that, people, you know, use especially Cat People in film school to talk about.
We didn't really watch too many horror movies. I think we watched... I had a class. It wasn't scary movies, but it was like disaster movies, mm-hmm. which... So it's not the same thing. But that was like one of the main ones where we watched movies... a lot, but yeah, we didn't really watch any of those like classic 80s or even older movies. We did watch The Cabinet of
Calgary.
Calgary, yeah, but that was more of a dissecting that movement.
Yeah, the German expression.
Well, and like, there's a thing of, well, you know, it was an expensive thing to say, well, they didn't show the cat because it would be too expensive or it wouldn't look right. But what Luton does in that movie is you're not exactly sure if she really is turning into a cat and hunting people. And he's playing with that through the whole movie, that there might not be anything actually chasing her.
Yeah.
That Irina might not actually turn into a panther and kill people.
Yeah. But I also love, like, we talked about how something like Signs, seeing the alien kind of ruins it.
Mm-hmm.
And this, suppose she does turn into a cat, and suppose they show it. Suppose it looks like a person in a big giant panther costume or something.
Right.
It's the new Cats movie trailer.
Yeah, that's going to, I mean, probably don't talk about that movie now if they do something like that. It would have lost all its mystique.
So it's a person that turns into a cat.
Yeah.
It's a woman who believes
like
that.
Like a cat
person. She thinks she
turns into a panther and she will kill people she's jealous.
I was going to say, if she like literally just turned into a cat, they showed the cat, I don't think that would be... I think what makes monster movies weird is that you don't know what to expect. But if you expect a cat, then... it's fine if they show a cat.
Yeah. No, it's not a cat. It's a cat person.
Yeah, cat person. Then that changes a little bit.
Oh, I thought she thought she...
Yeah, I think it's a literal cat. Or like a... But a big cat, not a domestic house cat. I think it's a panther.
She's not a McGonagall from Harry Potter.
Right. Because then you could just show a cat and you go, oh, that's her. And then it's not going to kill that person.
Yeah.
It's not going to kill a woman as opposed to a panther, which
Or a dachshund.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they could have had... you know, you get a trained panther and you have it.
Like, well, they had the one in the zoo. I mean, they show one in the film.
Yeah,
but
like you could have a panther and have it walk around the perimeter of the pool.
Yeah.
Which is what we're supposed to think is happening in that scene, that it's circling her.
Yeah, but I think not seeing it is much better, because if you do see it walk around, because I believe she calls for help and somebody comes down and sees her, right?
Mm-hmm.
That person is going to see that there's a panther walking around. Like, that's... it's just not going to make good narrative sense. Whereas she thinks she sees something, or maybe she does see something, but we never see it. Like, we're left a little bit in the dark and then somebody comes down and you don't know what actually happened. That's a much more effective way of storytelling, I think, than actually seeing it. So all his directorial choices there, I think, are spot on.
Yeah. Nice.
Anyways.
Sweet.
Yeah. So those were Nothing Is Scarier.
Love this trope.
If you have scary things for us, let us know at onthetropes@gmail.com.
What's on the horizon for...
What did we say? Oh, we're doing Bride of Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah.
We're doing Universal Monsters.
We're doing practical effects?
I think we're going to save that for after Halloween.
Oh.
Although I've got a bunch of scary ones on mine anyway. Just because it comes up a lot. But
we'll
do something else, and then a big episode for 200.
Yeah.
Big.
Huge. Yeah, I ruined it.
Yeah. What else?
Ruined.
Find our loot at onthetropes@redbubble.com. Rate and subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever it is that you're finding us. And you can support us at patreon.com/onthetropes.
Yep.
As always, I have been your host, Nick.
I'm sir.
Oh.
I'm Eva.
And Kyle.
Okay, bye-bye.
Signing out.